What is going on, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to part one of October, the Halloween horror movie Star Wars special extravaganza. It's going to be a few parts. This is part one. Our guest is currently dancing. She just found out literally that these specials were going to be called October.
I can't get over it. I had a great October is that. The best idea.
That's fantastic. It should just be a canon holiday, like Life Day, where it's like the same caretaker party, but like trick or treat version of all of them, like all the nuns, but it's like ghost sheet costumes. That needs to be a
thing. I love that. Yes. Oh my God.
That sounds wonderful. Anyway, we might be able to make those with like caretaker action figures. I'm pretty sure there's at least one.
There's a caretaker action figure?
I think in the 3¾ line there is. I'd have to check. But anyway, before we get down that rabbit hole, let's actually introduce who's on the show. You know her, you love her. If you've listened to the show before, she's been on a couple times prior to this, an episode all about her origin story, and then an episode that was just the two of us shooting the breeze for a couple hours about all manner of things like Ben Affleck and Pirates of the Caribbean and things like that. Things that are tangentially related to Star Wars if you try really hard. But she is the owner and creator of the Creature Cartel shop online, which has seen great success since we first became friends back in April, thriving despite the state of the world. And then also now a podcast host in her own right, the co-host of Clan of Two on the Friends of the Force side of things. Great people over there. She's going to be breaking down the entire second season of The Mandalorian week by week. So you're going to get eight parts, 800% the Tori Fox in your life this fall. So that's exciting.
That's great. Yeah. Oh man.
800 times the Tori.
Your introductions, man, you flatter me. Thank you so much.
I try. I mean, if you don't like actually. Here.
Lovely to be back.
Yeah, if you don't actually plug like what this person is doing, then it just sounds rude.
I guess, sure, yeah.
And you're doing stuff. It's always weird because when I intro people and say what they're doing, a lot of the times they have this reaction of like, I'm doing that? Like, I'm doing stuff?
I just feel like weird about it. I'm just like, they're talking about me.
You're a podcast host now.
Me.
And now you'll be able to do that.
It's true. It is true. Isn't that weird? I'm excited.
It's exciting times.
It is.
Mandalorian coming in hot to save us from our dread.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, to save us from all manner of real life things like COVID, the election, all those things. We'll be able to escape for like 40 minutes a week. It'll be really exciting. And then hopefully they'll give us with another Disney gallery about the second season. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
Get any more in my life.
I just need one of everyone like interacting with the puppet, the baby.
Honestly, like how Pedro in the season one gallery was like holding a pillow while he was voice acting.
So very pure.
But how have you been doing? How's everything been? I mean, I know, but they don't know. I mean, you and I talk all the time.
It's been great. Like you said, my shop's doing really well, which is like unexpected, super grateful for it. So I'm still working on that. That's still going well. I just released a collection with my friends Savannah and Alyssa. They work together on some really cool t-shirts for Ahsoka Tano and Satine from the Clone Wars. And then I made corresponding accessories. So I made a Ahsoka headband and some Satine earrings, which was so fun to make. Satine's one of my favorites, and she deserves so much more love, I think, in terms of merchandise. So that's gone really well. That's over on my shop. Got quite a few of those left. So doing that, hopefully moving soon. And with that, hopefully gonna start a Patreon with instructional content on all the weird stuff I make. So that's kind of what's going on with me.
That's awesome. And of course, people who listen here, they will know immediately when the Patreon and all that stuff starts up. The brand new studio, hopefully, that comes with moving. All that extra space to do all manner of creations.
Need that outdoor space, you know, that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point now, we were talking off air, where you just sort of feel like a little, like you've lived double the time. You literally have lived double the time in wherever you live right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, my boyfriend and I have been in our apartment that we're in now for like 2 years, but it really is kind of like 3 years, because this entire past year we've not gone to work. We've worked from home.
It's absurd. It's ridiculous. I feel like I've like changed as a human being like in the time that I've been
Absolutely. Oh my God. I've like changed so much, I feel like.
I've had to like confront like habits of mine and things. And
yeah, because you have nothing, you're just left with yourself. Like you just, yeah. You're just sitting around with yourself.
Yeah. You don't get to leave. Like I look off to the side here. I'm a habitual not bed maker. I don't make the bed because I just feel like it's useless. And I know that I'm probably in the minority opinion, but now I look at it every day and I'm like, oh, I should probably start making that.
Have you started?
No.
Have you started?
No, I haven't yet.
You just thought about it.
but I'm at the thinking stage.
You just thought about it. Okay.
I'm inching toward action.
See, I think I've regressed actually. I think I was someone that made the bed all the time. If I was the last person out, but Justin's normally still in bed. But now I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like yeah. Justin normally makes it. But
because who do you have to answer to?
You're right. You don't have to answer to anybody. Erin's fine with you not making the bed. She's chill. No. She's fine.
No, she's not. No.
She hates it. She's not down with it.
She's a woman of action. Mad respect for her.
We love her for it.
We do. And we also love segue time. We love spooky season and Halloween. And here we are kicking off the October series. Like I said, up top, Star Wars horror movies. It's going to be a series where myself and each guest, great lineup of guests that are going to be coming on. I knew I wanted Tori to kick it off because so much of just the ethos of Tori is creature features and just like you're laughing.
The ethos, I just can't. That's amazing.
It's great. You know, you gotta take, you know, your AP English classes for something. You gotta be able to hold on to some of those terms AP later English. On.
Heck yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Miss Phelps. But the your whole being is sort of centered on that, you know, golden age of horror and how all of that permeated throughout things like Star Wars all the way through to some more of the modern masters like a Del Toro and things that we have going on sort of just throughout cinema and how we're seeing sort of, I'd say maybe in the past 10 years or so, a resurgence and a new appreciation for the practical side of things. Whereas before it was sort of like Del Toro was the only one who sort of planted that flag. And even other people that were doing it in their movies, like a Peter Jackson, abandoned it later and went more CG. And obviously it's well documented with George as well. But now we're seeing, you know, I mean, the most popular Star Wars character in the world right now is a puppet. And that's sort of been in your wheelhouse. And so I knew that if I was going to have everybody approach these horror conversations in a different way, that we would get that side of that realm with you. So basically the premise is that we are going to discuss the guest's idea, the initial seed of the idea for what a Star Wars horror movie would be. It's going to be very loose and fun, and we'll expand it out, figure out the characters, what the story would be, and sort of by the end, hopefully have something that resembles a movie, or at least a pitch for a movie. A movie in your mind, an audio drama, if you will.
Oh yeah, let's do.
Yeah, right. Oh,
let's make like it an audio drama.
A fully produced audio drama of your idea. All voices are just us and our friends who will work for free.
I imagine that as like, you know, the it's a popular TikTok audio that people use where it's the beginning of the 21st of September and then it quickly switches over to like a kazoo playing it. Like that's kind of what I imagined. that's the quality that I want.
Like the
for the audio drama.
The 20th Century Fox fanfare that turns into a recorder.
Yeah. Like that's what we need. That's the energy that I want.
It's gonna be like Tommy Wiseau, like level direction on this.
It's bad but still good. Yeah, exactly.
Because it is real Hollywood movie.
Yes.
So I want to hear about your real Hollywood movie right now. I've heard the broad strokes, or I've read the broad strokes via text.
Are we doing both or one?
We're gonna do both.
Okay, we're gonna do both. Great.
Lead with the one that you're less excited about. That way, it sort of like builds.
I feel almost an equal amount of excitement for both, but I think because of what the creature is for the second one, I'm gonna go with the this one first. So I want to start off by saying that I have a really hard time demonizing any sort of aliens in Star Wars. So I love creature movies, but I don't want to, like, you know, I don't want them to look like they're bad, because they're just, they're all so great.
Because you were like a little kid who saw, like, the Petronaki Arena in Attack of the Clones as a kid, and was probably like, but they didn't ask to be locked up in the arena.
They didn't ask to be locked up. Oh, Nexu's so cute.
They're upset.
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
And so, let's address real quick. Obi-Wan Kenobi goes hard on those creatures in that fight. Like, he could have, like, people dog on Cal Kestis nowadays for, like, how many creatures you kill in Fallen Order, but Obi-Wan,
that was a funny tweet.
Obi-Wan hacked up that the, what is it?
Yeah, there? Like, zero hesitation. The Jedi, like, track record for, like, just wrecking the wildlife is, like, not
it's
great.
Like, he,
I always think of the Zillow Beast, like,
oh yeah,
that, like, is just the most tragic thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, like,
honestly,
if you do, like, the you know, the time frame, it's only like 20, you know, a little over 20 years later that he would, you know, explain the Force to Luke, and he's like, it binds us, it penetrates us, but he left out the, and sometimes you gotta kill something.
It's,
and
like, just, but I'd be killing everything all the time. He left out a lot, that old man Obi-Wan, he really did.
He did. The Acklay did not have to go down that way, but.
Oh my God. But so anyway.
So you won't demonize these creatures.
So it's hard for me to go through a lot, right? So I have attempted to do these in a way that is kind of like, like you said, there's kind of like a misunderstood element, which is part of what I think makes a lot of the, like, because I'm really attracted to things that pull from, or the actual, like, Universal Monster movies, like, things like that. Like, I really enjoy those. And I think a good amount, like, you know, Frankenstein, there's always kind of like that misunderstood, like, he just doesn't really know what's going on kind of thing, you know? Right. So anyway, so, but I've tried to kind of channel that a little bit, I guess, so. So one of my favorite arcs in the Clone Wars is the I can't remember the name. It's the Talls episodes where they go, they're near Pantora and they go onto Alzok 3, and it's just like, wait, what? There's like a whole species here. Like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think the Talls are really great. So I'm gonna go with that. So we want kind of the Thing vibes, but really mainly just for like location's sake. So my idea is stormtroopers crash land on Alzok 3, find an abandoned base. Maybe it's like an Empire base. We can like hash that out later. It's, you know, they're isolated in a cold climate. They are in the base and there's a really bad storm coming that would just absolutely kill you. So they can't go anywhere. They can't leave. And so it's one by one, they're picked off by an unseen enemy. But really, it's just the Talls, and they're just defending their land, and also, you know, stormtroopers, so it's fine that they're throwing them around.
You have to create...
makes me feel a little bit less bad.
You have to create cannon fodder that's, like, not sympathetic.
Yeah.
And this is...
I feel kind of bad. But really, it's the Talls protecting their land, which was kind of the whole point of that arc in the Clone Wars, was just, like, this is their freaking... Like, this is their freaking planet, man. Like, just...
And are these Imperial stormtroopers or First Order? What era are we in?
You know, it's an interesting thought. I like immediately was like Empire, right? But could be First Order. Maybe that would be more interesting timeline wise.
Could be. It's up to you. I just wonder because, you know, in terms of the sympathetic.
Maybe that would make more sense in terms of timeline, because it would be even more time elapsed from the actual Talls that probably would, like, that went through the whole ordeal in Clone Wars, and there was kind of like a understanding, right? But I also kind of feel like if it is an Empire base, then clearly they infiltrated and clearly they've already had conflict. So maybe that's why the Talls is like going ham on them, you know?
Talls going ham, the working title.
Going ham, Talls going ham. I just wrote Talls. But anyway, so my idea for casting, I don't really have like, I feel like with the whole stormtrooper thing, it's kind of like, I guess at one point we would maybe have some of them take off their helmets, or maybe they take off all their helmets. I don't know.
I think at some point that's valuable because you want to see like
some
really
emotion
good,
when they're getting killed.
Some good screams, absolutely. Some sweat, like some crazy eyes.
Sweat, yeah. Sweat wars. So I mean, it can really be anyone, but like, and this is both related and unrelated to recent events. I love Raul Cooley. So I've always wanted him to be in Star Wars because he is such a big fan. And I think it's really powerful and valuable when they have people that are like actually massive fans in right. Star Wars, like some of the best content. So I've always wanted him to be in Star Wars, but like clearly, you know, with recent events, I'm like, absolutely. So oh, yeah. I think he'd be great. I think he'd be great as a stormtrooper. But also I like really put a lot of value in seeing like fresh faces in Star Wars. So I enjoy seeing a cast that's like a lot of people that I've never like seen before that aren't like massive big names. So
yeah, for sure. There's always that tradition in Star Wars of like the unknowns. And also there's always like that one like veteran, like venerable character actor or someone that sort of anchors it all. So like maybe there's a stormtrooper commander here who's like, I've seen some shit like that guy. And but I've never seen anything like this. Like
Yeah.
There's always those archetypes like in
who could that be? Mm-hmm. See, I have that kind of character in the next one. And okay. I do have someone in mind for that, but I don't want to use that person for this. There's also a specific reason why that person.
Well, let's start here. Let's start here. Maybe it'll help with the casting. Do you think, and I guess this could sort of tie into sort of your just horror background in general, when you look at your experiences throughout liking horror movies and liking creature features and all of this stuff, there are archetypes that stand out that are sort of universal, like, you know, the final girl and things like that. Are there things that you find yourself like attracted to, that you look to, types of characters that like stick out in your mind that you would want to insert?
I do love the idea of a final girl, so maybe we'll have one. The girl stormtrooper makes it out. But also, I don't want the Talls to die. Maybe that's a like, I now understand you kind of scenario. Because another thing that I really enjoy, obviously, Creature from the Black Lagoon is like one of my favorites. And so I think, you know, you have in that, you have a woman who's obviously terrified. But I think there's also kind of like undertones of like, he might be just like misunderstood. So maybe there's like, I really enjoy that kind of a character. So maybe it's kind of like Final Girl / I understand you, and they sort just like walk out as friends.
I don't want to say like a Pocahontas thing, because that's not like the point of the movie, but sort of that, you know, we're the bad guys. Like we, you know, and
maybe there's some like underlying conflict where she just like hates her coworkers and they're all like assholes. Oh, I just cursed. Oh my God. Am I allowed to curse in this?
Yeah. No, totally. Okay. Yeah.
Normally curse. I don't know where that came from. Oh my God. Well, I curse all the time, but like not in podcasts. So I'm like, oh no, I'm so sorry. Maybe she doesn't like any of her coworkers like a ton, or she's kind of like through this experience realizes, wow, I work with some really awful people. Right. And maybe there comes a moment where it's like they're like, you know what? We're gonna kill this thing. And she said, absolutely not. And then maybe she has to turn on her coworkers. That's a very interesting thought.
I think so too. And I like the idea of, I mean, I fell off The Walking Dead at a certain point, but and I feel like a lot of us did. Like it honestly shocked me.
Like the Glenn episode and the episode after that were probably some of the best episodes. And then it was just downhill for me anyway. That's what I thought.
Yeah, it was hard. But the thing that I think was really smart about both the comic and the show was the emphasis on, and it was their tagline for one of the seasons of the Fight the Dead, Fear the Living, that it's the, like, it has to be that that she realizes that the other stormtroopers are more of a threat. The way that they immediately, like, and, you know, and there's that toxic masculinity element to it as well, where a couple of them would probably be like, let's just blow this place up. And then, you know, her with her more perceptive mind might have a mentality of like, you don't know what's in here. Like whatever this is, there could be kids of this species. There could be innocent. Yeah. You don't know. Could be other people trapped.
No, I love that. There really is nothing scarier than like actual other people. Like, that is the scariest part.
Shout out to the anti-maskers.
Seriously, I'm not, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm afraid of COVID, but I'm afraid of the people that are gonna give me COVID, because I don't.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what I'm more afraid of, is being near those people.
COVID doesn't have terrible opinions, it just does its thing. It doesn't have awful takes on safety and life.
You're so right, oh my God.
But yeah, so there's some kind of element like that. I'm trying to think of.
So let's. Oh, go on.
Well, no, I was just saying I'm not trying to model, you know, after specific scenes necessarily, but I'm trying to think of what are those staples like from The Thing that are, or from other similar storylines that are, would be easily adaptable. Because The Thing, I guess, the conversation, I guess, sort of needs to get a little bit broader for a second before we sort of return to the idea. And maybe I should have led with it up top, but it's, what are your feelings just in general on the Star Wars elements that could be twisted to horror? Because the natural, I think, easiest answer is the dark side. But this
I
is,
agree with that statement.
But this is not a story that is like Force lore. Like, this is not a Force story, at least at this point. So, and we're not demonizing the creature. So what do you think are the Star Wars-y things that could be twisted? I mean, obviously it would have a really sinister score.
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Like, for sure. Something really, really creepy or.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that statement. I think for me, like I said, it's really situational, because I think that's something that also really speaks to me is like in horror movies is kind of that like situation of like isolation.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this, they're stranded on a, well, first of all, they're stranded in general. They don't really know if there's any vehicles or anything like that, but also they're isolated on this base and they can't leave because the storm's gotten really bad outside and it would kill them. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things at play. And then obviously, like, it would be a rundown base. So you have elements of, you know, probably not a lot of light.
Yeah.
Probably. So, yeah. So I guess largely situational, I guess, is my answer. I agree with the score. I would maybe enjoy, like, kind of going off the rails from regular Star Wars kind of visuals, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think would kind of be necessary anyway with a horror movie if it was Star Wars related. But
I agree. And people, you know, people have trepidation in general of like, could Star Wars ever be X? Could it be Y? You know, horror or a romance movie or a comedy. Yes, and I think that all of those are really possible. You know, you just need to sort of have the willingness to break. Like, you look at like Mandalorian, especially, you know, Chapter 8, Taika's episode, it opens like a Taika Waititi movie. You know, he puts like, you know, 5 minutes of the two scout troopers and just the dialogue and the shooting and everything. And it still felt like Star Wars, but it was decidedly its own thing. And you could sort of see the different flavors, how, you know, Attack of the Clones has, you know, all of a sudden we're in a 50s diner and it's like, okay, like, and
it, you, why not? You
can go with it because it still had the visual trappings and things like that. So I agree with you, you know, just wanting to sort of break out a little bit, because you see stormtrooper armor and I think that would be enough to ground a viewer so that they would like, oh, this is Star Wars, like I know what this is, and they might recognize and then, the talls and things like that.
Yeah, and then, you know, like things in the base, like I think clearly, like I said, I feel like in movies where you're isolated, like in it could be almost be that like the base is kind of its own character, right? Mm-hmm. So that is going to add a lot to the story. You know, I would anticipate them clearly trying to turn on some sort of lighting. I think a really, really cool kind of like siren effects with like red light flashing, stuff like that makes it like.
Oh, what about like a.
Gives you that anxiety.
A flickering like blue hologram of somebody that was there before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to have, I was thinking about that too, that the wheels were turning when you were talking. I was like, we need to have some sort of like, almost like warning, but not. And I was like, I don't know if we can really have, because you know, like a lot of horror movies, you have that trope of like, people are driving up to the house and there's a random guy on the side of the road and he's like, hey, don't go there, it's dangerous, or like whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know it, like that wouldn't really make sense for me anyway, when I look at this environment, because I don't, like nobody else is going to be on that planet.
Right.
That's not like a talls probably. So yeah, that's really good. I think a hologram, like a leftover hologram, would be really, really impactful with that.
Let me pitch you a twist and you tell me what you think.
A twist.
What if, you know, toward the end of the second act, by the end of the first act, maybe they've gotten a one good look at, you know, maybe with a flashlight at the talls. So they know what they're up against at that moment.
Yeah.
What if at the end of the second act, they like get into a room that was previously locked and they find a Talls mortally wounded. And this Talls has like a big ass bite mark, like out of its shoulder or something. And you realize that they're on the defensive because both sides are not alone. And then they finally get their tech, whatever, to like finish decoding the message. And the message is like, the talls are being hunted. And then there's something like a wampa, like something way worse.
Wow. No, or I something. Like that. That's good.
And then,
no,
but really good. But these assholes, you know, still want to kill everything. And that's what turns the girl. Like, I've been thinking about what could make her a hero by the end.
Like, there's like hardcore evidence that they're not the problem and the people still want to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're like,
right. Yeah, no, that's
well,
they
still attacked us, like that type of thing. Like, we need to nuke this base. Like, we need to call in an airstrike from a star destroyer, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Mm-mm. No, that's good. I like that. Could it be a wampa? Maybe.
I don't know.
This is
yeah.
on there.
I was just thinking icy, but I don't know. Well, maybe it would have
something
to be like
be something
a,
totally new.
Could be Who something. Yeah. Knows? Oh, yeah. Could be a totally new creature, which would be exciting.
Yeah.
A new monster creature. I don't think that there's been something, at least maybe the Mudhorn. I was trying to think of like an impactful, like out of recent Star Wars, what has been the most impactful, like of the monstrous, like aggressive creatures. And I guess Mudhorn sort of wins by default. Maybe. Oh, Wrathars. Wrathars are there too.
Yeah. So that was something that when I was thinking of like what would be a good creature to center, that was one that I kind of thought of. But mm-hmm. I enjoy in horror movies, like I really enjoy Alien, stuff like that. Like I enjoy that kind of scary, like it's sniffing for you or whatever, like moment. I feel like Wrathars are like way too freaking loud.
Way too loud.
Like I don't, there would be like no like
wiggly,
sneak up. Yeah,
like...
there's like no sneak up with that. And that to me is like, kind of, for me, I feel like it would be hard to have like the style of horror movie that I would want with a Wrathar. But Wrathars definitely crossed
point.
My mind.
That's a really yeah. great point.
They're just like really loud. They're just like, ah! And they're yeah. like, you know, and they're also so big too, which is not to say, you know, I mean, Xenomorphs aren't like small per se, but like, mm-hmm. it's really big. I feel like if most environments, if you're in like an enclosed area, are probably not big enough to like I feel like the ship that from Force Awakens was like really big, obviously, because they were transporting them. And close quarters is very freaky too, so.
Right, right. I agree. I mean, that's a great point. A lot of what this series is going to be with you and with the other guests is sort of like, you know, the horror influences sort of playing in. So I love the idea that your brain went to that close quarters, like, protagonist is like heavy breathing and you know that somewhere on either side of their head, you know, behind them, above the shoulders, maybe right above them, there something is creeping and it's so close.
You gotta have the xenomorph mouth and the face moment, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta have the...
Instantly iconic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's a question. What if the Stormtrooper commander is Sigourney Weaver? And it's
really good.
And it's like some sort of... But she's obviously a jerk in this and not the hero.
Yeah, no, that would be fun, actually. I feel like that would be a fun, like, switcheroo. It'd be really good.
Yeah, yeah I love really stuff like that. I love, like...
That would be really good, yeah, because I could see her definitely playing the, like, I've seen some stuff, like, kind of character. Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, I like it when they get, like... Because, again, like, you want, like, unknown faces, but, you know, with Solo, it's like Woody Harrelson was sort of, like, the anchor actor, where it's like... You take your dad to see it and your dad, oh, I know that guy. Like, you know, Woody, cheers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, I know.
You
know,
you want to
yeah.
be able to put people in.
yes.
But yeah, so I think that very quickly we've developed a big formula, like a good like track record here for this particular movie. I'm trying to think if there's anything that we need to fill in. We've discussed some casting. Is there anyone else that you had in mind for any names or side roles or anything like that?
I mean, I feel like I have like a list of actors that I just like always thought would be cool in Star Wars. Like I would like Tessa Thompson. So like if you want to yeah. throw her in there, like absolutely really like her. Maybe she's the final girl. I can
yeah.
see that. I could definitely see her playing that.
The Stormtrooper with empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that would work. For whatever reason, when you start talking about Sigourney Weaver, I just started thinking about like really cool women that I just think are like the best. Yeah. And so I thought of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Do you remember?
I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis would be like a great like Stormtrooper.
This is gonna date this episode a little bit, and I don't care because it's October, and you should know.
October. October.
Yeah. I thought you were about to jump into a theme song. I was like, whoa,
no.
whoa. Are you about to sing an October song?
I'm not that musical. No, I'm so sorry.
But yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this, obviously, you know, this was done in October. So maybe this was true. Maybe it's not. But you can head over to Tori co-hosting A Clan of Two and maybe find out if this ended up being true. But there was that rumor that Jamie Lee Curtis was going to be in Mandalorian season two.
Yeah, that was like a very exciting moment for me.
And that rumor like came and went, and I was like, what?
It's like the one that I hope is real.
Yeah, like that one was hype. Because most of these have been characters, but we haven't heard like this actor is going to be in it. Yeah. We don't know who they're playing. And that is super exciting.
I love that. That's like my favorite kind of like rumor is like so-and-so's in this. And you're just like, what are they going to be?
Yeah. And Mandalorian season one had way more of that where like, I think that I knew a few months before Celebration that Nick Nolte was in it. And then I had heard maybe like a month after that, that he's going to be an Ugnaught. And I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. I can't wait for this show, whatever it's going to be. But yeah.
Yes.
And he was another one of those castings that we're talking about where, you know, Pedro Pascal and Gina Carano and Julia Jones, like they were, you know, known, but not like old veteran actors, but then you put like Nick Nolte in there and Carl Weathers and stuff, and it sort of helps anchor the whole thing. So I like all of these suggestions.
So good.
Yeah. Do you have anyone in mind to do the score or to direct this bad boy?
So I'm not super good at like, I'm not very good at like knowing composers and stuff. Like, I feel like I know like the basic ones, you know?
Right.
What I will say is that Ludwig Göransson.
I always say Ludwig.
Ludwig. Okay.
With a W, but see, I don't know that I'm right.
I don't want to mess it up.
I do the WV like a German, but
I will say that that music has spoken to me like no other from The Mandalorian. Like it is
beautiful.
The best music ever. So I guess, I mean, it feels like he can do like literally anything. So I would assume that he would probably be really good at making, which is what I think if we had a Star Wars horror movie, it would have to be like weird.
Because yeah, absolutely.
We've never had a Star Wars horror movie and it would have to be suspenseful, but also Star Wars. And I definitely feel like he could nail that.
Absolutely. I completely agree with this pick. I mean, I'd agree with Ludwig scoring anything. Like Ludwig could score me doing my laundry later today.
I mean, correct.
It would be incredibly compelling content.
I just want more recorders.
Let me tell you, we need to do some sort of like recorder shirt for the show. Like,
go back to
the last episode that we did with Tori. We talked about a Ludwig
shirt. Did I talk about recorders last time too?
We talked about Ludwig last time you were on because they had just done that. They just did that video of him like just alone on the set and like the volume around him.
Amazing.
So good. So good.
That is my religion, that video.
Fantastic. And that sort of leaves the last slot sort of to bring this together. And that's people that could direct this Star Wars horror movie.
So one of my favorites is Annihilation.
Yup.
So Alex I just Garland. Looked up the director because I'm horrible with like directors and composers and things like that. Alex Garland directed that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be cool with those kind of vibes.
Yeah.
Truthfully. Because I really enjoy, because something that I think about kind of talking about having those like kind of like up close and personal moments with like the creature, right? And it being like tense and like, I think about, obviously I've already said it, Xenomorph getting all up in Sigourney Weaver's face, but also the bear from Annihilation getting up in their faces is like some of the spookiest stuff.
Yeah, it's really good.
I've ever seen. So I feel like that would be a nice pick, but I'm open to other people too, because I am not super good at.
No, I think that's a great choice. I mean, and again, like this is, I'm here for suggestions and just pitches and polishing, but I think that is a great pick. Alex Garland is extremely talented. I mean, you look at his work with Ex Machina as well. He has a great mind for the sci-fi of it all. And, you know, the sci-fi survival that he sort of showed in Annihilation, I think would translate really well. And also the bear, you know, having instantly become such a great horror image and such a fan favorite moment and sequence in the movie. Any, you know, the original creature that we would need for this movie that would get revealed at the end, it could be terrifying. Like, it could be something really, really, really terrifying.
Yeah, like, maybe that's where we get into the weird, like, maybe there is. I kind of brushed it off because I enjoy all parts of Star Wars, but I'm really not, like, a big, like, Force person.
Right, and I know that about you.
But maybe there's, like, a weird, like, maybe there's an element to it of, because I agree with you. I think the first thing people go to is, like, Sith, which I, you know, I feel like there's a lot of things that are possible that are weird through that side, you know, like resurrection, weird crap like that. Right. Maybe even, like, ghosts. I mean, clearly there's, like, Force ghosts, so maybe there's a weird kind of, like, demented, maybe, maybe adding another element to this, maybe the reason that there's another creature there is that they were working on some weird Sith stuff at the base.
Yeah, and, like
it got out,
the Sith Eternal, like those creepy lab boys that we see in
Rise of Skywalker. Like, they're totally like Frankenstein and some weird something.
Left, so it's like there's not, you don't have the dark side element. But it's a reminder to the audience.
It's the leftover from what they were working on.
That way the audience would be like, oh, the Sith? And like, it's not important for this movie, but it's that kind of thing where then another Star Wars creator could pick it up in comics or could pick it up in a book or something like that. I really like that. They get to the very, very bottom and it's like similar equipment to what was keeping Palpatine alive and pumped with vague fluid.
Yeah. That's spooky. Okay, cool. I like that.
Yeah, because that was one of my favorite things about that movie was just how JJ was like, I'm going to do a goth horror for 5 minutes up top. And it's the movie won't feel that way after, but we're just going to have like just some of the creepiest imagery in Star Wars. I would like to for someone to pick that up at some point. And I think that Dark Legends, that book that came out, has an Exegol story of a Sith way back, and she's also trying to live forever, and so it sort of tees a little bit of that up. I love this idea. I love it. Do you have titles in mind?
So I just wrote down Talls. But that's just
a Star Wars
my
story.
Working title, I guess. Talls, a Star Wars story. No, yeah, that's a really good, like, what would it be? Like, what would the... So I'm just kind of... This is me spitballing. I don't know if this is good or not. But I kind of thought about, like, I feel like you'd probably want it to be something that's kind of, like, situational with, like, the environment, right? Like, you think of, like, I immediately thought of, like, the fog, right? So I guess I went to, like, the frost. But maybe that's dumb. I don't know.
No, I like something like that.
Like, I feel like it needs to be short and simple, but I also don't want it to be, like, the title to be like, but there's also another monster. Like,
no, yeah. Like, you want, like, good horror titles either have to be super effective in their simplicity to me or very over the top. Like, I love, you know, what's the title that I love? This is not a horror movie, but I love the title, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Like, that title is a sentence.
It's a long
title. So you either need to go all the way or really, really simple. So I like the frost. I like it. Is it named for the location of
that's that, you know, that could be
like named for the base
name, and it could be blah 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 base. Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. So what would the name of the base be? That's what it should be. That's what it should be. I feel like it should be something related to, let's just see, let's just look a little something up here.
Let's just
peruse the internet for just a moment. Because I'm just trying to look like, you know, maybe, no, I don't feel like they would name, never mind. That doesn't make any, well.
What?
Well, because I'm trying to, so what I was doing was, this is what I do with a lot of things if I want to like name something, is I'm looking at like, okay, this is a base that was previously used by the Sith Eternal, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make weird Frankenstein things. So I was trying to kind of look for like words and stuff associated with them that could like be the name of the base.
Mm-hmm.
pickled Snoke base.
Jars full of juice, a Star Wars story.
Hmm.
What if it was Frost Base or Cryo Frost Base?
Cryo Base. Ooh. Cryo Base sounds pretty cool, actually. That just makes me think of, like, this is very off topic. When I was in high school, I had this wild physics teacher. He was such an interesting man. My best friend and I had met at that point, Brandy, and we were in the same physics class. And our best friend, Skylar, as well. And he said something one time about how Han Solo was cryogenically frozen. And we were like, no. Like, we all were shouting at him. We were like,
oh, actually?
I was, like, pushing out my glasses. I was like, actually, it's carbonite? Thanks so
Let's
much.
Invite that physics teacher to the Zoom call right now.
Absolutely not. Never. No, because he'd probably show up. So, no.
another opportunity to talk to my students.
No. All right. Oh. I don't know if I can really. I think cryobase is fun. I'm into that.
Yeah, and again, this is just in our imaginations. Imagination.
I'm just like, I'm upset. I'm not one of those people that will, like, go after other people, but, like, when I think of things, I'm like, this has to be canon. Like, it has to make sense.
No, I do the same thing.
Like I have my own little Lucasfilm story group. I'm like, this has to make sense with everything else.
I completely agree. I mean, I've talked about this once or twice, I think, on air. I know I've told you off the air, but myself and Nikki from the Imperial Senate podcast are both writing our own episode 9 scripts, just sort of like imaginary, like if we were given the job and there was no Rise of Skywalker. And it's not out of hatred for Rise of Skywalker. It's just a thought
it's like
exercise.
A fun project. That's really yeah, cool.
Just like a thought exercise on how hard it would be to end that. And first of all, very difficult. Second of all, we are doing that as well, where we're like, nope. Can't make anything up. Like, it has to line up. Everything needs to be.
No, I respect that. You gotta respect the existing lore, you know?
I agree. So I gotta say, I like this one a lot. But for people listening, that was only one. That was only one of the pitches that Tori wrote down and then later texted to me excitedly.
I'm so sorry. There's more.
Now, we leave the tentatively titled Cryo Base for a more oceanic vibe. So go ahead and lead us
in. Yes. All right. So this is a new planet. So I haven't named the planet yet. So who knows? Well, you know. Because I like seeing new planets, even if it's like an environment that we already have seen. Like, yes, I know, like Kamino's all water, you know, Mon Calamari is all. But this is a new planet, but it is predominantly water. We have a submarine that is piloted by rebels. They are in Empire territory, so they cannot resurface because they would probably be gunned down by the Empire. Additionally, they are in dangerous water, so they cannot leave the vessel. They are treading along, and they hit something unknown in the water, which springs a leak. The crew plugs it, but not before the water is already up to their knees. And I don't know, suspend disbelief here. They can't drain it. I don't know. I feel like a ship would probably have something that, like, whatever, suspend disbelief, because the creature that I've picked has to have water to live, so just let it be up to the knees in water. So, like I said, resurfacing and leaving the ship isn't an option. Now, this is something that I think you, Mr. Idea Man over there, can think about. So I was thinking, you know, why are they in this Empire territory? Why are they in a submarine? Why are they under the water? So I was thinking they could possibly be transporting something or someone. So think about that. Maybe they have a prisoner or something like that. But so, big reveal, a Dianoga's gotten on board.
Yup.
So it's alien, but it's in water and it's in Star Wars.
So my first question would be this: how intimate a setting is this submarine? Like, are there multiple rooms?
I've been going back and forth on this because my initial, like, in my mind's eye, it was pretty small. But then I watched The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen the other day, and that Nautilus is so fly. So yeah. I kind of want a little bit of a Nautilus vibe. Not as big as Nautilus. That thing is just massive. But so I would say like a medium size.
Probably like a submarine. The square footage of the Millennium Falcon, but underwater.
Maybe even little bit bigger, slightly bigger. So there's enough room to like run around and hide in, because I feel like you wouldn't need that, or else it would just be really boring and the Dianoga would just like pop up and like it would be a pretty quick.
Yeah, because we would just be like, movie. There it is.
Yeah.
And there it goes.
It's in the corner. That's weird. Yeah, exactly. So I would say medium size. And let's just say parts of the ship probably don't have water that have leaked in, just because, you know, larger ships have where they can like seal up the door and all that fun stuff. So yeah. I think the setting here gives us a chance to have that kind of alien vibe, because it's isolated, they can't leave. But additionally, I think it also opens up some really interesting kind of like situational things where it could be like, you know, like I said, you have the doors that you can seal. So let's say someone freaks out and is like, I don't want the Dianoga to get me, so they lock their friend in or like whatever, you know. So like I feel like there's a potential for a lot of like weird little things like that to happen.
Right. And obviously here we have, versus the first idea, we have instantly more sympathetic characters, because we, the audience, have an understanding of the fact that these are the good guys in the grand scheme. These are the rebels.
Yeah.
And the Dianoga is not as endearing as a Tall's or as some of the other. Yeah.
It's really only been presented in like kind of a scary format.
Right. So it has a little bit more of you could show it being a little bit more heinous. You don't have to redeem it in the end, in a lot of ways. Now, what you said earlier about what the purpose is for this mission, where they are, what they're doing, I like the idea of getting an object, but I also like the idea of getting a person, especially if it's like an Imperial, like we're in Empire space because we just captured a high value. Like, we need to bring this guy in to be interrogated.
Yes. So, and I think that does add, if that's the route that we go, I think it adds an interesting element of, you know, eventually maybe having both sides work together, or maybe he gets free or he or she gets free and then turns on some of the crew, you know, like there's definitely a lot of possibilities with that idea.
Yeah. I mean, you could go so many ways. I mean, my first thought was like, if Thrawn was on board or someone like that, who then would sort of analyze this entire situation, the whole submarine, as like a chessboard, like everyone's freaking out, water's coming in, and we just have shots of him like sitting like patiently, or sitting like with handcuffs and just like looking around, and he's calculating and like, how can he manipulate the monster into taking them out so he can take over the submarine, like playing his own game off to the side. But I also do really like the idea of this being what turns him, maybe sees the rebels as more sympathetic. So that's why I got away from sort of the idea of like a Thrawn type character. Like, is this more like a grunt, a trooper, maybe an officer? Maybe he's like a middling guy.
I also thought about, which this could be, I feel like this, it might introduce like more trouble than good in terms of like figuring out logistics of things, because I feel like there would have to be like a very specific moment for reveal because of the power that this person would have. And also like it would have to, you know, they clearly have to be in like special kind of thing, kind of like what Maul was in the Clone Wars. Like if it was maybe like a force sensitive person.
Right. That could
maybe be like a Sith Lord we never heard about or something.
Or is it a situation of, and again, this is getting away from the people of it all, but is it like a Sith holocron or something that they had to get out, you know, for whatever reason, that way they could, we have to get the Sith holocron out, that way the other rebels on the surface stand a fighting chance, but we have X amount of time before everyone on this submarine is corrupted, and now this Dianoga is trying to pick people off, but we're turning on each other.
Ooh, that's a lot.
I know. Whoa. It's I think it's overwritten.
I kind of like it though.
But I also do like the people stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think that Maul stuff is just gold. You know, there's not a lot of it, but when he's locked up, it's just awesome.
Yeah, and it's like knowing a cool, that it's like a ticking time bomb. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I like both.
I like that too. Or if it's like, oh, the Empire's being helped by like a dark side. Yeah. Soothsayer or like a cultist, or you know, because again, if we're fitting this into the canon, we can't insert really another Sith, like a red lightsaber wielding Sith, but there were definitely like acolytes of the beyond type people and Vader fanboys and Knights of Ren and other people like that. So somebody with the dark side, in a vague sense, that's been helping, is captured.
Yeah, or maybe it's like a Night Sister or something.
Oh, I love that, especially because they're like mostly wiped out. So that adds the urgency of
they got
like
that we weird have, magic. Man.
We have one of the last Night Sisters on board, and we need to get her to Rebel Command, because if we don't appeal to her, she might help the Empire or something. We need to strike an alliance with her. And then the underlying tension of, like, I like with Maul, like when he was trapped in that thing in the Clone Wars, you could see his eyes moving. I like the idea of constantly cutting to her, just wondering. So the audience is like, when is she going to break out? And when she does,
is she going to just go crazy? Yeah. Okay, cool. I like that. All right. That's it.
Love that.
Sweet. Okay.
So transporting a Night Sister from point A to point B. The floods are happening. So I guess now's a good time to ask if there are characters that you had in mind, like archetypal wise?
Yes. So I would like to submit for this one because it is easier. Clearly, there really aren't any aliens really for the most part. Mm-hmm. In the Empire. So this opens the opportunity for some fun alien stuff. So I feel like a Mon Calamari has to be on board, or a Corrin or something like that.
Yes.
It's like, they're just like, yes. It's just their jam, right? But in terms of like, I don't really know what I would want for like actor-wise on that, to be honest. But I feel like you gotta have like a grizzly sea captain. So I like immediately thought of Willem Dafoe.
Oh my.
Because Willem Dafoe can be so like ominous and creepy and just like, you know, Godspeed Spider-Man. So like, you know, it's just,
we attack his heart.
Like, it's so just perfect. Good. It's gotta be him. He's gotta be the Grizzly Sea Captain.
I think I could watch a supercut of just the Willem Dafoe Norman Osborn lines over and over and over.
I like want to see like a supercut of like, I hope that they gave him like the opportunity to improv just like talking to the mask. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And
like, I just want like hours of that.
Even in the sequels where he is like in Harry's head and he's like the, it was all for you, Harry. Like, he's so good.
Avenge me. Anyway. So he probably bites it at some point, right? And have him yell, avenge me.
And to be clear, is he the Mon Calamari?
No, I want him to just be himself.
Okay, cool. Because I was like,
Willem Dafoe should just be Calamari,
then he's basically guilt from Finding Nemo.
I feel like part of Willem Dafoe's like major appeal is like the eyes. So I feel like he has to just stay Willem Dafoe. Yeah. So he's grizzly old rebel sea captain.
Love it.
Mr. like, oh, I've done this run 20 times, like that kind of vibe we got going on. So who else is on this ship? So I would say it's probably a decently manned ship if it's the size that I'm thinking, so maybe like 20 people, but I would say clearly we're not going to focus on all the people,
right?
And I feel like, you know, Dianoga is going to pick off quite a few before we like kind of the main crew knows what's going on,
right?
Because all I could think about with the hitting of whatever it was under in the ocean that caused the leak, right, I imagined it to not be like too big of a leak, but one of those things where it was like, oh no, like we have to, it was like hard to get to, so it kind of like escalated quickly,
right?
I always think about those videos of like the octopi that can just like make it through like a pinhole because they just squish themselves.
Tori,
they're just like liquid
Fox.
So that's kind of how the Dianoga got in, was just Tori, like those
those videos horrify me. Like, they
octopus are, they're very scary.
I have a deep-seated fear of a couple animals. Really? Exactly. An two animals.
And they're too intelligent. That's the problem. They're way,
that's
too
what I'm saying. Like,
like,
you know, I think that they might actually be aliens. Like, and I don't subscribe to many conspiracies, but the idea that they are not from here.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
I think that there's something there for sure.
I can see that. But they're scary. But
yeah,
anyway,
showing the Dianoga like, doing things like
Dianogas
that.
Dianogas are like octopi with just a massive eyeball on top. So.
And Dianogas are also, at least the one on the Death Star was Force sensitive.
Yes, they can be. So that could be another interesting element.
If the Night Sister is talking to this thing, like
maybe that's what it is. She is getting it to come. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
We just cracked it.
We did it. We did it the whole time. But that's the big reveal towards the end, is that the whole time she's been like, hey, bro, I'm in here. Come help me out. And then he was like, I'm coming.
Yeah. And that's why it like breaks out on board. And it's only at the end that somebody like goes up to the Night Sister like in the case and like starts tapping on the thing, and her eyes open and they're green, and that's when it's like, oh no, like the Dianoga is not the problem again. It's that it just got worse type
this
deal.
Is so good.
Yeah.
This got really good. Wow.
Oh man. Because I just I don't know why I didn't think of it earlier, but I just remembered that from a certain point of view story that is from the Dianoga's point of view. And which I think was the one written by, let me check who wrote that. But yeah, the whole idea that creature like that for so long was, you know, just the trash thing. Like most people don't even know what it's called. Like, oh, it's the trash thing. And it was being a jerk to Luke, and it tried to kill Luke. And it's like, well, I love that whole idea. And this also sort of ties in with your initial thesis of not making the creatures necessarily inherently evil. Like this Dianoga could have just been chilling, like it was just swimming by, and then all of a sudden it felt pulled into the submarine.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like this big reveal moment of her breaking out of her bonds, and then she just like hugs the Dianoga. They're just best friends.
Ooh.
Just kidding. That's not that scary, but I would love to hug a Dianoga. That's a side point.
I love that.
And then she like rides the Dianoga off onto the sun, like into the sunset.
Like a noble steed.
She needs like a trident or something, and I feel like that's like it, you know? This is good. I like this a lot. Wow. This got a lot better than what I thought. It's still good. Like, it was still good to begin with, but this is absolutely more than I could have hoped for. This really expanded very nicely. I'm very happy.
It did. Like, I could legitimately see this playing out.
Picking up on, like, other horror movie elements, again, clearly I love Alien. Hello. So, we gotta have some of that, like, I'm in an enclosed space, I'm in a hallway, I'm like, where is it? Oh, there's like water dripping on my head, kind of like scenarios, like there has to be. I feel like Willem Dafoe, until like maybe like, all, like maybe he's part of the big reveal, maybe his death is like the, like kind of happens as the big reveal's happening. Our Night Sister breaks out of her bonds, so then it's the double whammy. You got Night Sister and you got Dianoga coming after you.
Is he dying and he bleeds out and he drops the Avenge Me, and like in his dying moment he like points at the Night Sister like in the tank thing, like almost like,
oh yeah, maybe before she breaks out, yeah, and then that's like the catalyst of her just being like, all right, I'm finally gonna break out now because I've just been controlling this whole situation the whole time anyway. That's pretty good. Pretty good.
As the Dianoga like constricts him and stuff, I guess almost like in a boar gullet type way.
I kind of imagined like kind of like a kind of like at the end of Rogue One where they're running from Darth Vader and it's the guy and he like can't get through the door.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's like, oh, he's gonna get like wrecked, like that's so sad. But so like I kind of that's kind of the death I envision for Willem Dafoe, is like, ah, he can't, like he's just being constricted and like pulled back and there's like not really anything you can do. You just kinda have to like watch the guy just like,
yeah, you just watch him eat it on screen. I love that.
That's great.
In a similar fashion to Rogue One, are we taking out all of the heroes in this situation? The first pitch, she makes it out with at least one Tulls. There's at least one alliance and there is the final girl element. But this could be full on the Night Sister wins.
Yes, because that's the thing, is I'm a little undecided on that, especially now that it's a Night Sister, because I just love Night Sisters. So I'm like, I don't know if I want to. Mm-hmm. I guess when I was looking at this from an angle where it was kind of just the Dianoga at play, I think I kind of wanted there to be a survival of both, just because, you know, clearly I don't want the little guy to die. But yeah, it's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought super hard either way, but I feel like trying to think from a practical standpoint with the rebels and like what they would be able to do to defeat a Night Sister and a Dinoga, like those are pretty stacked odds. I don't know if you're gonna like come out on top with that.
Yeah, unless it's sort of like, right? You know, whoever, when Defoe dies, whoever steps up and is acting captain, you know, you could have a little bit of drama there of like, you know, you were first mate, so like you need to make our decision now. And then maybe this person is like, all right, whoever wants to try an escape pod, feel free, but this submarine has to go down because we can't beat her, and we can't beat, you know, we need to let Rebel Command go that we're going to blow it up. Or something like that.
So, that's a really interesting. That's interesting.
So it becomes a suicide. I would
like
to think
that she like shields herself and her and the Dinoga in the blast, and they still live. Another thought that I
downer. I love it.
Thought of that could be, but again, you kind of have the whole mystic element, and like, would she be able to come back? Like, who knows? But I thought of like in, I think it's Alien Covenant. Sometimes they all bleed together. I'll be honest. Just like how they just like shoot out the xenomorph like into space, like they're just like in and out. So you mentioned escape pod. My mind was going to escape pod as well. Maybe there's a scenario in which they are able to like eject the Dinoga and or the Night Sister out on a pod.
Yeah, yeah,
or something like that, and that's how they like survive. Or maybe it's a thing of like you kind of said. Maybe not as extreme of a thing as like we're gonna blow up the ship, but maybe there's like a self-sabotage element where they're just like, we're gonna blow a hole in the back half of the ship and then we're just gonna close it up, and like obviously the Dinoga wouldn't die, but it wouldn't be able to get over here because it would be sealed in, and like maybe the Night Sister would die, like, but we don't know. Yeah
some ray shields and stuff that could be really cool. I also love the idea of building off of either of those, where they think that, you know, the Dinoga is eliminated from the equation, and they think that the Night Sister is like defeated or dead or something. But we know that we've seen from, you know, different characters like Mother Talzin and Night Sister Marin that they can teleport to a certain degree. Like that's one of their biggest advantages on regular Force users. If they think that they've defeated her, and then at the end we see like the sea floor, and it starts like some sand, like, or like starts to swirl with like green energy, and like the movie ends on like she's gonna return type element.
Yeah, see, I really enjoy endings that are kind of open ended in a way like that.
And I think that like, that's such a horror thing. Like all of the horror icons, you know, all of the main slashers and things, like there's always
like that, oh, are they gone? They're not.
Yeah, there's always that tease of like he might not be, like the new Halloween did that, where it was like, oh yay, Laurie, she finally killed Michael and everything, but it's like,
yeah, right, you thought, yeah,
like we watched him start to burn, but we didn't see the man die, that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think that'd be a fun last shot, that the magic swirling and a little Dinoga just like bloop bloop.
Yeah, bye. In the background.
I don't want to ruin anything for you. I don't know if it matters to you.
What?
Have you heard about like the Star Tours sequence that they did?
Recently?
So they did a new sequence for The Rise of Skywalker.
Right. It was Exegol, right?
Where the Death Star ruins are.
Oh, Kef Beer.
There you go. Yeah. That's the other, I don't know. I don't know if you care about spoilers for like
No. Sequence. Please go ahead.
Okay, so it's like my favorite thing ever. Because it's so, yeah, you end up on Exegol and it's cool. You're like part of the cavalry that arrives. But prior to that, you go to where the Death Star ruins are. And it's like, oh, you're going, oh no, like a big wave took you under. And there's like a whole Dinoga family because the Dinoga was on the Death Star.
Oh, that's neat.
It's my favorite thing ever. I was like, this was made just for me.
But you know what's great about that is that the Dinoga in New Hope was on the first Death Star. And what that tells me is that
they definitely were like, let's save this guy and put him over here.
Well, it's that like sanitation was like they failed just as much on Death Star 2, where they were like, we're not going to fix any of the flaws, and more Dianogas got in like to the second one.
Sure. I would like to think that someone was like, I love this guy. Let's just like move him over.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Put him in an escape pod.
That's impossible, probably, but I like to think that he didn't die.
That's really, really cool. I didn't know that. I haven't been on Star Tours since they updated it for Force Awakens, maybe Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I love that. I love both of these movies. I love everything that we've come up with. I like this tease ending, tease of a franchise. Cause
we need a name.
Oh yeah. We need names and we need scores and stuff. Can I nominate somebody for the score?
Yeah, you please do. You do the directing and stuff on this one. I don't know.
I think that. So when you look at Rogue One, obviously the score was by Michael Giacchino. It originally was not, though. It was supposed to be by Alexandre Desplat, who, of course, later went on to do Shape of Water. And I think that this is where we finally let him do Star Wars.
Yes. I agree with that statement.
I think that would be great because it wasn't even like a bad blood situation. He just like, I think it was like scheduling or something. Like he ended up not being able to do Rogue One. And then Michael Giacchino did the score in like 2 weeks. Like it was one of the craziest rush jobs ever. Wow. And I've always wanted since then for Desplat to come back because he has said, I think that he would do it. So that would be, that'd be who I would call. And then for directing, it's difficult. It's difficult because you don't want to be super obvious with what you're doing. What if this was like Bong Joon-ho's Star Wars movie?
Yes. Accepted.
I think that could be a riot. I like it.
Absolutely. I agree with that statement.
So name ideas.
Only one I have is H2O. That's bad and I don't want that to be it. But that would be the
space bear like.
Maybe that's like the tagline.
Name.
H2O now.
Does that mean that there's a droid on the crew who has like H2O in their droid name?
Oh, that'd be really fun. Yeah, and I feel like Star Wars, and like, which is why everyone's just losing their minds over like the boat in the Mandalorian, because there's not a lot of boats and stuff.
No.
So I feel like the idea that we're on like a submarine is like a whole other world of like we can have different droids and like I feel like there's a lot of like cool technological like opportunities here.
Absolutely,
that would be like really fun.
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
Anyway, back to the name. I honestly am like a little bit at a loss.
I don't want to steal from anything directly, but I don't know. I know you at one point you were working in a comic book shop. I don't know if I don't know if you were reading Aquaman at the time or if you ever have cared to read Aquaman. But Aquaman circa like 2011, the first storyline of that run was called The Trench, and I've always loved The Trench as like a simple title.
Trench is a cool title. I do like that.
And they were like horror creatures and stuff.
Yeah. The Trench. I like that. Yeah. No, I think that works perfectly, honestly. I feel like the simplicity is what we need.
Yeah. Star Wars, The Trench, or The Trench, a Star Wars story. Or The Trench, a Star Wars tragedy.
Not if you're the Dianoga, baby.
That's a victory.
That is a victory every time. Yeah.
I like it. I like that. My last question would be, who plays the Night Sister?
Oh, okay. Give me a moment. Margot Robbie.
I like it. I'm saying.
That was the gut reaction, was Margot Robbie.
I'm saying. I think we go for it. I think that she, you know,
she'd be good. She'd be scary.
Yeah. We've seen how well she rocks.
Such a good story. Who can they pitch this to? I love this so
Isn't it like actually legitimately good? Like
that's really great.
What do I have going on today? Like I might have like start spitballing some of this. Yeah, like for
I've
real.
I've never written fanfic before, but like let's do it.
Yeah.
This is the one.
This sounds like really, really good. We might have to actually go in and make this happen in some capacity. I really, really like that. And I also just like the idea of the next phase of Margot Robbie's career being all Oceanic roles. Like she's got the Pirates movie coming up and she should get into some sort of like, she should be in the Little Mermaid remake. I don't know who she'd play, but I like it.
Absolutely. I like it a lot. Okay. I'm very satisfied with this.
Great stuff. What an episode. Good times.
What an episode. What a show.
I know. I don't like to be so self-indulgent that I'm like, that was great, but that was really great. That was good stuff. You delivered. Look at you with your notes.
Thank you so much. I do have notes. Everything. They're here.
Yeah, she has like the legitimate notebook you guys can't see, but it's wonderful.
Hey, I came prepared. I'm always prepared.
You are always prepared. That's why you're a successful business owner and creative. You got notes. You're ready.
We're trying. We're doing our best over here.
I'm ready for everything. So there you go. You guys got a twofer for this first installment of October. Again, these are very, you know, fun, laid back, and silly. But at the end of the episode, we ended up with two solid pitches. We're really excited.
The companies
about
right now.
I'm gonna call Kathy Kennedy because she listens. I'm gonna be like, "Yo, Kathy, you can have that one half price."
For real, Kathy, call me, please.
You can have the two of us for really the salary like of one person. I think that's really good. Really, really excited about these. Thank you so much for the effort and for the notes and for putting all of this time in. And I think
This was so fun. This was a really great, you such a good idea. So thank you.
Thanks. I was really happy about it. And again, there's going to be more October episodes. Who knows what genres we might cross into. Could be a Star Wars slasher, could be a Star Wars possession movie, could be lots of different ways you could go. I mean, and again, they've touched on things. We've seen a little bit of possession in Star Wars Rebels, a little bit of that, you know, horror element in Clone Wars with Dathomir. Obviously, Rogue One sort of ends with a slasher sequence in a lot of ways. Very, you know, big Michael Myers energy coming from Vader in that moment. But yeah, I love the idea of the very alien and thing-inspired things that we have going on here, but also with the unexpected humility gifted to the creatures in the situation, the sympathetic nature, the humanity, whereas people are often the problem. And I like that we highlighted that here. I like it. I think that was great stuff. So if you're happy, I'm happy. I think we will end it here.
Yeah, nailed it.
Crushed it. So let people know, Tori, where they can find you, old places and new places.
You can follow me on social media, The Mandatorian. So it's just Mandalorian, but with a T instead of an L. That is on Twitter and on Instagram. Those are my personal accounts. On Instagram, there is a period between The and Mandatorian. You can follow all of my shop stuff at Creature Cartel or Creature Cartel Shop. And I'm on Etsy for all that fun stuff. And like Alden said, I'm going to be on Friends of the Force for a fun Mando recap series once Mandalorian starts up. Excited about that. So, yeah.
There you go. Doing big things, making things happen, selling great products.
Doing my best.
Aren't we all? And now, evidently a writer and film executive and development executive as well, because that's gold.
Honestly,
that's
so
money.
Good.
Yeah,
money.
Really, really excited about it. And then obviously for this show, as always, you can find me personally at AD_Strider, tweeting a lot incessantly, trying to stave off the madness of quarantine and of the world's current state, both in terms of the virus and politically. And then you can also find me on Instagram at @A.D.Strider. If you find me on Facebook, I mean, I guess. And then you can also find me for the podcast at Octo Radio, everywhere you get your podcasts and all across social, AHCHTO Radio. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, go ahead, leave a review, leave stars. It actually really does help the show. Some people think, it doesn't really do anything. Nope, not true. It actually does really help. And there's going to be more merchandise coming. We might be moving the merchandise to a different location. There'll be more on that when those shirts designs are in and when those actually do drop. I've teased sort of what they are, and you'll find out more about that soon. Podcast is also available everywhere else. I know some podcasts are being moved right now to Amazon has added some of their shows to Amazon Music in a podcast section. I don't know sort of what the process is going to be for that, but more on that to come. And then lastly, after October is over, there will be more announcements about expansions, new things, new ventures, and we will talk about that more when we have stuff to share. So for right now, Tori's yawning and dancing at the same time.
So sorry.
It's okay. We had a good run. We made it, and we're excited. So thanks for everybody joining us here for October. right now, we will say, punch it, Chewy.